gopis were crying, expressing their lamentation in various ways. They fainted repeatedly, the limbs of their bodies suffering terrible pain, their hearts shattered by sorrow. They attempted to enter the lake as if to join their Lord at his side. Commentary. The gopis reached the lake after everyone else because they had fainted on the road from simply thinking about Krishna's distress. Their hair was scattered and their broken bangles and other ornaments were scratching their arms. They entered their lake, quote, as if to join Krishna, since their real purpose was to drown themselves. How, someone might question, can these gopis, who are worshipped by the wisest scholars in creation, be ignorant like this of the Supreme Lord's power? The answer is that their minds were disturbed by sorrow. It is not reasonable to think either that the exalted gopis cannot be subject to sorrow. The fact is that they simply could not tolerate separation from Krishna for even a moment. Then, suddenly, the Lord gave up this self-contrived sport, freeing himself from the from the bondage of Kali's coils. He climbed up on the serpent's thousands of upraised, expanded hoods and stretched out his lotus arms. People. Commentary. Because he did not want to see the gopis unhappy, Krishna extracted himself from the trap of Kaliya's embrace before the girls reached the water. He jumped onto Kaliya's hoods, which were too numerous to count, and spread out his arms to lift the gopis up with him. Even though they were not very close, he is Prabhu, so he can do anything without restriction by the laws of nature. Continuing, Krishna guided his beloved gopis, all of them at once, and briskly raised them up onto the snake's hoods. These hoods appeared like rows of jeweled platforms, creating a most impressive sight as they swayed back and forth attractively. Krishna danced artistically with the gopis on these most amazing stages to the accompaniment of numerous singers and musical players. Thus the reservoir of all amusement enjoyed his rasa dance pastime. How dramatic. Commentary. Never before had anyone seen such dancing stages as these. To complement the festivity, many demigods appeared in the sky above, singing and playing musical instruments. In this atmosphere, Krishna and the gopis could fully enjoy their dancing. Since Krishna is Kautu Karnava, the source of all entertainment, this entire spectacle was a creation of his own energies. Sri Nanda and the other cowherds were slow to recover from their deep shock and so did not witness this rasa dance. Very clever. Continuing, their attention drawn by Balaram, Nanda and the others on the shore were delighted and surprised to see Krishna restored to consciousness. Commentary. Even with Krishna saved, the older cowherd men were still wary to see what else Kaliya might do. Demons play a very important role in rasa. Thus, subduing the king of snakes, Krishna, with a smile on his face, seized the shawls of the serpent's wives who were offering him prayers. From these garments he fashioned a single, long harnessing rope, which he placed playfully pass through Kaliya's nose with his left hand. Mounting the serpent like a horse, Krishna urged him forward with great force, at the same time happily playing his flute with his right hand. From time to time, he forcibly goaded Kaliya with his flute as if it were a whip. Thus he manifested the full extent of his favor on Kaliya, making him his carrier. Commentary. Having to carry Krishna like a horse is no degrading punishment, but rather a great honor. Only rare souls like Garuda are allowed to become the Supreme Lord's carrier. As the Nagapatnis stated in their prayers to Krishna in the 10th canto, what you have done here is actually mercy for us, since the punishment you have given the wicked certainly drives them away, certainly drives away all their contamination. Indeed, because this conditioned soul, our husband, is so sinful that as he assumed the body of a serpent, your anger towards him is obviously to be understood as your mercy. Kaliya's wives presented Krishna with priceless jeweled ornaments, clothing, flower garlands, and fragrant paste, which he put on the serpent's hoods. So the wives gave the ornaments, and he then decorated Kali with those ornaments, clothing, flower garlands, and fragrant pastes. With the Padma Utpala and other lotus flowers which the Nagapatnis brought from the Jamuna to offer him, and with the same ornaments, Krishna decorated the gopis and himself. Commentary. Krishna did not immediately put the ornaments the Nagapatnis presented on his own body. First, he placed them on Kaliya's hoods, and then he accepted them for himself and the gopis, who were all still standing on the hoods. Translation. As the king of serpents recited prayers for him with countless mouths, Krishna came out of the lake, making all his friends and family dance with joy. Commentary. With so many mouths, Kaliya could nicely offer prayers. In this way, Krishna blessed him to become like Anantashesha. Continuing. Together with the entire horde of young cowherd girls, most amazing Krishna dismounted Kaliya. The serpent was filled with happiness because he had obtained an abundance of great favors and benedictions which Garuda could hardly ever receive. Remember, it was Garuda's chasing him that brought him there to the Jamuna River. Kaliya had good reason to be satisfied, having been graced by the presence on his heads of Krishna and the gopis. Krishna offered him additional benedictions, one of which was that the auspicious marks of the Supreme Lord's feet would always remain imprinted on his hoods. Krishna is the most amazing person who can be so kind to even a wicked creature like Kaliya. Continuing, Krishna was flooded by a downpour of tears of joy from Nanda and the others, who were busily offering him a series of worship and embraces. Krishna mercifully gave the king of serpents some instructions and exiled him from the lake. Repeating what Krishna said from the 16th chapter of the 10th canto, O serpent, you may not remain here any longer. Go back to the ocean immediately, accompanied by your retinue of children, wives, and other relatives and friends. Let this river be enjoyed by the cows and humans. If a mortal being attentively remembers my command to you, that is, to leave Vrindavan and go to the ocean, and narrates this account at sunrise and sunset, he will never never be afraid of you, Kaliya. Totally satisfied by the charming festival of music, song, and so on, raised by the multitude of cowherd men and women out of their sheer spontaneous joy, Krishna returned to his herder's village. Next comes the stories of Keshi, Arista, and Tamsa. We'll hold on to those stories for tomorrow. Yeah. Pretty ecstatic, huh? Today we visited Sanatana Goswami's or one of his bhajan kutirs. Imagine the consciousness of Sanatana Goswami writing these transcendental literatures and writing the commentary to these transcendental literatures, meditating on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to compose transcendental literatures that will bear his wonderful teachings for hundreds and thousands of years to come, but living in complete simplicity, total dedication to the service of Radha and Krishna, complete austerity, but in such high transcendental consciousness. Simultaneously relishing these wonderful pastimes of Krishna and thinking of the well-being of all living entities. Such transcendental souls. What Dinabandhu was describing today, I think it was today, the position of Sanatana Goswami as he made it his business. Yeah, because Prabhupada described like it, Dira Dira Jana Priyo. He made it his business to associate with everybody. Yeah. Just like this, the added comment he gave to the story of Rupa Goswami being supplied milk or sweet rice by the young village girl on the occasion of a marriage. But he knew of all the personal issues of all of these Vrijavasis. It seems very much very much like Dinabandhu's relationship with all these, when we go to these villages and people all know him. Dinabandhu Maharaj. And they love him and he loves them. Of course, this is Sanatana Goswami, and he would sit with them, hear from them, sing bhajans with them, teach them, care for them. So accessible and yet so elevated. How amazing it must have been to be in the presence of in Vrindavan at that time when the six Goswamis were here. And it's not like there was just six and that was it. There's only six to go around. There was so many personalities, all part of Lord Chaitanya's transcendental upliftment of Krishna consciousness. So many. But in such confidential moods of relationship with Krishna, as we can see from or hear from reading this. I know the devotees that are involved in this Brihad Bhagavatamrita project, they're very happy. I visited in Govardhan for a couple of days after arriving here in Vrindavan. They're having discussions 2, 3, 4 hours a day for like 2 weeks at a stretch, just going over how to properly present such, you know, some little passage. So they would discuss for 2 or 3 or 4 hours the subtleties of these pastimes that we're just reading through in a breeze. You know, with Jayadvaita Maharaj and Keshava Bharati and Gopi Puranadana and 2 or 3 other devotees. The one devotee is being trained in editing. Younger devotee, Gurukul graduate. 2 to 4 hours, 3 to 4 hours every day. They were doing that for a month. Of course, the Goswamis, I think on the 26th, will visit the Radha-Damodar temple, and we'll see the area where, unless it's been changed since I was there last, but it used to be that there was a parikram path. As you go in the Radha-Damodar temple and go around to the left, there's a number of samadhis, and then there's kind of a sunken area underneath the back side of the worship mandir itself. And then over to the right, into the flat area where Rupa Goswami's samadhi and bhajan kutir are. Anyway, so in that back area, this I remember very clearly from when we first visited. Again, renovations may mean we can't even take that parikram path anymore, but the Goswamis would sit there, Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Imagine having discussions amongst such personalities. And same way, for hours, they would just go on discussing Krishna Katha. Inconceivable. But, and sing bhajans together. What ecstasy they were experiencing in Lord Rupa's association. So, any questions or discussion on this wonderful material we're going to need?
Go ahead first.
Thank you.
It was said that thirst for loving Krishna, or Loya, was the mother of humility.
Yeah. Well, we backing up, there was some discussion that there are different degrees of that humility as well. But it was either Narada or Uddhava saying that as there's a special love found in Vrindavan, there's a special humility found in Vrindavan also. So, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, I would have guessed it was the other way around, in order to desire to love Krishna and seek humility. So is it like a circle, one causes the other, and then the side increases, and then the other side increases? Or what is the mother then of the desire to love Krishna and seek humility?
Well, it doesn't. Let's just go back to what it said earlier. It said that there are two. See if someone can remember. There are two primary characteristics that distinguish Vrindavan from, or the consciousness of those in Vrindavan from any others.
You're solely dependent on Krishna. Like they think that part of the example of the dwarka residents, male also some kind of small word like a yoga, you know, the Vanaras, they always have some other sense that he is the all-powerful. So somehow they have some idea that he's going to fix everything. The residents of the world, they have no other shelter for Krishna. Is that
That was brought out today. So just going back, there was a point. Well, one was humility, an absolute kind of humility, and the other was
determination.
Dependent, because the definition that was given and seems to be repeated as a theme. It's an important, very important component for us to understand, and that is a sense that although one may be sufficiently competent to perform some task, one feels oneself utterly and totally unable to perform that task without the mercy of Krishna. We still haven't answered the question, just defining, just going back, reviewing the conversation or the teachings we're getting here. So humility and absolute humility and determination. So an incomparable determination, an indomitable determination to achieve that goal. So that's the lowlium part. Great intense desire to achieve and a feeling of helplessness to achieve it without the descending mercy of Krishna. So going back to your question now, we have both the story of the Brahmin and of Gopal Kumar, and in both cases it seems that what this is following, in both their cases it's following Adau Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha. They both have some preliminary something, some. And it's not even, in the case of Jana Sharma, it's not even Brahman. It's not even really spiritual. He wants material well-being. But he has faith in something greater to achieve that. So some faith, and then some fortunate association. And through that, gradually going through different stages with layers of becoming humble, and by humble, the same definition, feeling oneself unqualified without descending mercy. Without greater, there's this, your point now, the absolute dependence upon Krishna. Although Krishna then decorates his devotee with various capacities and so forth, but do allow him to achieve so many things and do so many things and serve in loving ways. So it's Adau Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha. And that gradually increases the intensity of attachment for Krishna and exclusive shelter in Krishna. Yeah, you got it. I mean, I can only restate the same thing you said in different language, because that's what it says. It's not like we're not hearing that they've got this material false ego. They have a certain, they're friends, and they have a sense in their friendship with Krishna of a certain confidentiality and importance in that friendship, friendly relation with Krishna. they're not, the tension is missing that's there in the gopis, and that is, I'm not serving Krishna well enough.
It makes the gopis a lot more exalted than the cowherd boys, or?
Well, more exalted, at least in the sense of intensity. My understanding, a very simple way of saying it, what makes the love of the gopis most exalted is the degree of selflessness of that love, which is not to say that Mother Jasoda is selfish or the gopas are selfish, they're moved by false ego, selfish false ego, but the degree of intensity of that selflessness, or in this case, the degree of intensity of humility, that is, I don't have the capacity to serve Krishna without Krishna's mercy, and I'm not sufficiently deserving of Krishna's mercy. That sense of humility is maximum strong in the gopis, and correspondingly, the intensity of their love is correspondingly most strong, which attracts Krishna. Pretty deep.
That is related to that. You're saying that the gopis are very humble. Then one pastime we heard that when Lord Shiva entered as Gopishwara and Krishna was glorifying him, then Srimati Radha immediately came in, and the Vandu also was saying that he was getting angry, very angry. How can you meet this ingredient as when I am the Gopishwara and the head of the
right. So why did she do like that? And the answer is? Krishna likes. For Krishna's pleasure, she can do anything. Anything. And there's only one motivation, Krishna's pleasure. So if any one of us were to do like that, not the same. Yeah.
I just wanted to make a comment of appreciation for the program of absorption and immersion that you provided this week, because you made it very real. But in New York, talking about all these was a little bit, that I'm here, I can understand every minute.
Dina Bandha was at lunch today asking about your well-being, that your spirit is amazing, that after being chased by a bull twice, bouncing back and still going along.
Well, it's just like this place is energy-giving, and I couldn't regard it if I wanted to. it's a very strange...
It's mystical. It's Vrindavan has many mystical potencies. If someone, there's another side to Vrindavan's mystical potency, and that is, if there's some hardness of heart or some deep contamination, Krishna can make it so painful for it to be very painful. Very painful. First-hand experience, and have had dealings with others who have had first just got pulverized. Ask Srinivas about his experiences here in Vrindavan. Agonizing. The Vrindavan is wonderful. Nothing like Pavan Sarovar. Nothing unclean can remain in Vrindavan. And so, again, what to speak of is with the pure-hearted souls like Sanatana Goswami. And we have being here, it's, we can talk about at a distance, but coming to those places, those personalities are present. Their personalities are present. And they reciprocate according to our the love that we extend and the openness of heart that we extend. Those personalities reciprocate. It's not just some hocus pocus. Real reciprocation. Drawing those who come with open hearts to their position. They want. They're very compassionate. So that the physical austerities just go along with it.
And they don't even feel, even with the bullfing, that was pretty, you know, your name would have been pretty heavy to be but then all the time came and, you know, helped me out, washed me. I was really amazing. didn't feel like an austerity.
Yeah, this is special. Vrindavan is very, very special. Each one of us experience, just like, you know, Krishna's eating the Manohar Laddu, each one of us will experience that special exchange with Krishna in a very unique and different way. And then sharing those experiences is another part of being in Vrindavan. Yeah.
When we come to Vrindavan, it's not that we are coming with the pure heart, the conditioned soul.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you're saying, it is a very uplifting experience, but still those dirty things are there in the heart.
Yeah.
So do they, I mean, sometimes it creates some kind of a fear that I am carrying these things. So, will the negative, as much as the purifying potency is so much, the negative effect is also so much because it's a very sacred place and holy place. So how do you reconcile?
Well, our responsibility is to not act on those things. In Kalyuga, we're not responsibility for carrying them, but for acting upon them. And the spiritual strength that we gain from being here, and I am repeating, you've been missing some of the earlier parts, but I'm repeating the importance of maintaining a prayerful mood while in the Dham, so that not for the purpose of protecting us from those things while in the Dham, but for the purpose of cleansing ourselves from those things while in the Dham. So that they, when we leave, they remain as very contrasting features of what pure devotion is. So we can not just keep harboring them, but keep eliminating them. You know, have the strength and the experience of uplifted Krishna consciousness, and part of the reason for staying for these 11 days is the sustained effort will endure. I mean, you know, the time spent, it will more likely endure after we leave Vrindavan. The memory of being in Vrindavan, but will be there, and more importantly is the consciousness of being above those contaminations and ridding ourselves of those contaminations. Just a little on the side here, I'm making an arrangement for both a slideshow presentation and a PowerPoint presentation, so I can do it either way depending where I am, of all the places that we've been. Someone's going to take pictures all around in Vrindavan here, and another person's going to take pictures all over the places that we've been, and I already have a number of them on a couple of CDs, digital pictures, so when we go back to our places, and even if I don't have a slideshow, a slide projector. I'll be able to have it on my computer. When visiting, we live these experiences through sound, vibration, and share them with other people. And if any of you want those materials when they're all prepared, I'll gladly share them. At least the digital ones, because they can be reproduced like that. Slides, I don't think I will. I had a slideshow of Varsana and Nandagram many years ago, and I showed it a number of times, and then somebody borrowed it once, and I never got it back. So, we'll be able to share this with other people who weren't coming with us. Yeah.
I just wanted to say that I know for myself, if I come to Vrindavan by myself, I would have been completely lost.
Yeah.
And I just really appreciate that you brought us all together and that you're giving us so much association, and I just really feel like it's special mercy that I'm like getting a little attached to Vrindavan.
We owe a lot to being a bundle for the world. A lot. He's our bridge between Vrindavan and our world of illusion. Very kindly giving his association. You know, he's, all of us, well, have some common relation, but he's just like a mendicant with no affiliation with any one of us, but very quickly he's building friendships with so many of the devotees and identifying with them and their situations and persons' names, and we're very, very fortunate to have this company. I mentioned doing it at lunch, but I think it would be nice to personally express that. I don't know how. I'll think about how we can do that. Maybe on the final day, we can, when he's doing this thing on the microphone, we can pass, just request his patience. We'll pass the microphone to a few devotees who can express their appreciation for him. He, well, I think before we go, before everyone goes, Daivashakti Mataji, who I know from Radha Govinda Mandir, years of Sankirtan we did together, serving Radha Govinda. And now she's been here in Vrindavan for a long, long time. She's very involved with the Vrindakun project as well. And they reciprocated with our contribution. They gave some gifts. So there's a little book on the care of Tulsi Devi, so families can take one each. And if we run out, they'll supply some more. And then there's a picture of the little Vrinda Devi, the Murti that apparently got damaged. And then a little notebook. Anyway, so just little memos you can take with you. Any other?
Maharaj, we discussed about Nanda Maharaj, Shunamaya, their original expressions in the Deepa Shiva Chaya. So, how the bhava changes, because they don't have the same bhava as Shunamaya and Nanda Maharaj has.
Who doesn't have the same as who?
Goloka
Vrindavan Jasoda and Gokula Vrindavan Yasoda do not have the same bhava?
No.
They're expansion. Okay. So the example is given an object, a mirror reflection, and a shadow. So your statement is the mirror reflection and the shadow, they don't have the same bhava. That's understood. But they're expansions. Like Lakshmi is an expansion of Radharani. I asked Dina Bandhu at breakfast this morning, could you describe a little bit more about the relationship between Tulsi Devi and Vrinda Devi? And his answer was, it's like Lakshmi is an expansion of Radharani, so Tulsi is an expansion of Vrinda Devi. Now the bhava, the mood, I should say, of Tulsi. Tulsi is used in worship of Shalagram Shila, in worship of Lord Narayan. And when the four Kumaras go to the gates of Vaikuntha, when the Lord comes to the gate, they smell the fragrance of the sandalwood paste and the Tulsi buds stuck to his feet. Tulsi is also used in worship of Narayan, but also used. So the expansions don't have to have identical features, but they're expansions nonetheless. Not identical features of mood. But so that personality who's serving Krishna in that demigod position or svarga position can have the opportunity to experience the fullness of love of Krishna, these earthly pastimes are that opportunity, to provide that opportunity. So it's very, very merciful, Krishna's earthly pastimes. Didn't give a reason. He came back again, that's all it said. Rumor. And then Krishna came, and sure enough, there he was. There is another narration that I haven't read, but I've heard it described, that there are different appearances of Kaliya. They're not always the exact same as this Kaliya Leela that we describe at Kaliya Ghat. There is a form of Kaliya where life is described here. Krishna subdues Kaliya and rides Kaliya like a horse, and periodically goes back and mounts Kaliya and goes for a ride. It's like sporting. Doesn't say in this particular time why he's come back. He's come back. Krishna's chastising him again. There's not a lot of detail in that. I have not read ahead, and I did not read this before, so what to speak of, there's lack of detail. Okay, so we'll end there. Meet again at 6:45 tomorrow morning. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Sanatan Goswami ki jai. Srihat Bhagavatamrita ki jai. So before everyone disappears, to refresh our memories and to bring those that missed yesterday's class up to date, where did we begin and where did we end yesterday?
Began again by summarizing the previous class. And the point where Nanda Maharaj, Krishna enters into the forest after Nanda Maharaj goes back.
Yeah.
And then there are the, it was a very quick summary of his pastimes in the forest. Every one or two verses summarize his pastimes in the forest, and he comes back. And then he has his, again, evening pastimes with the gopis, and the chapter was closed. And then Gopakumar starts explaining the constitutional position of Krishna and his devotees in the spiritual world, their expansions as demigods, the devotees' expansions as demigods in the heavenly planets, and their position as identical position in the spiritual world as identical expansions, and the spiritual, the demigods being some kind of a partial expansion, something like a shadow and a reflection.
Yeah, so what's those two terms? He's on the pretext the core description is explaining how to understand the statements that Nanda Maharaj is an incarnation of the Vasu Drona. He's taking that one and then saying, and similarly the other work this way. So what's the what's shadow and what's reflection? How does that fit? And what's the Sanskrit? Pratibimba? Pratishaya. So what? Which is which?
Reflection of the shadow.
And how do those terms apply to what is being said? Which is what? How do they? What's what, and how do they apply? Do you recall?
So when the Shastras say that Drona expands, Drona is an Nanda Maharaj is an incarnation of Drona. Actually, what it means is that the Nanda Maharaj who appears in this world is none other than the Nanda Maharaj in the spiritual world. But an expansion is one of the expansions of Nanda Maharaj is also Drona. And when they say that Drona appeared as Nanda Maharaj, what it means is that he has merged into the, he has been embodied.